This is Counterculture with Marie Buskey, Wednesdays at 10 a.m. on Reality Check Radio.
Good morning and welcome back to Counterculture here on Reality Check Radio with Marie. Joining me now is Nathan Matafa, jury. Now, you have got a lot on your plate right now, Nathan. You are re-establishing with an incredible team, St. Stephen's College, known now as Te Pene. This is a huge job.
Yeah, but, and a very necessary one, I suppose. So, yeah.
Absolutely. So let's start back at the beginning. A little bit about you, and this is not your first educational rodeo. So let's start there, and we'll move into what you're doing right now.
Yeah, well, I guess, you know, I became a teacher like thousands and thousands of others and really loved it. Actually, I took it on for all of the reasons you should get into education, long holidays at Christmas. Nothing to do with transforming education, but I come from a family, I suppose, that have always pressed the edges around some of that stuff and at least asked questions. And I remember graduating from Teachers College years ago and my father saying to me, "You realize we don't need more teachers in this country." And I thought, what the heck have I just done for the last 4 years? And his message was simple, actually. We don't need people who perpetuate the norm. We need to transform education if it's going to be beneficial. And at the time, I wasn't thinking about anything like that, but it stuck in the back of my mind, actually. And as I got into education, I realized there was a need for us to look at alternatives and look at something different. And I guess that led me eventually to a point where I had this idea that maybe we should start our own school. Completely naive, luckily, I think, because had I known the loopholes you've got to go through, I'm not sure I'd have ever ventured down this track. But this is now the third school that Yvette, my wife, and I have been involved with. And, necessary. I've loved the two other experiences and opportunities that I got through Tutua and Palmerston North, and then that morphed into a program called Manukura, which is, I can say it now because we're not there, it's something that we're really proud of. And when you're in the grind, you just seem to be in the grind all day and doing what you do. But yeah, I love the opportunity and I love the learnings that I got from all of that as well. What I have made a decision along with Yvette to do is, how do we get on with the space of Māori boys, Māori Pacifica boys education? Because frankly, it's horrible and it doesn't need to be. Doesn't need to be is the other part that I'm adamant about. So here we are now at Te Pene and looking for the next iteration of what Te Pene as a boarding school for Māori Pacific and all students actually of this country to attend, and we're getting ready to go.
Yeah, you're getting ready. Sure. Now, there's a long legacy in that site of education. It came to an end. You were an old boy there. Do you think it was justified that it came to an end? I mean, in that, has it allowed it to have a new beginning?
Yeah, well, if that's the justification, I think that's a really good part, actually. The fact that it closed, and it closed for various reasons. The media presented one perspective, and there were some elements of truth to that, and that needed to be, you know, unearthed and reconsidered. But equally, these places had lost relevance in terms of where the Māori public were moving at the time, and the inability to move abreast with that. Yeah, I think in the finish, it was foreseeable anyway that this place had run its course, I think. So The length of time, 25 years now since it closed in 2000, well, coming up 25 years, I think is what we've seen in the country is a massive maturity as a country, a lot more acceptance. If you consider what's happened in the last 30 years for Māori, and particularly in the space of education, with the advent of Kuhangareo and Kura Kaupapa, Whare Kura, Wānanga, Māori television, all of those advents that we've seen over the last three decades, this is a good time to be Māori in this country, actually. And in the mix of all of that, the space of Māori boys' education is probably more needed than ever now. We're being challenged in all sorts of ways, but I see those as opportunities for us just to demonstrate those concepts of mana motuhake, those concepts of rangatiratanga, our ability to design and deliver for ourselves. We do it best, actually. We know ourselves better than anybody else, and so we should. And therefore, we should be given permissions to do that. And that's what I think Te Pene is going to allow us to have a go at.
Yeah. So challenged how? How are these young men being challenged now versus young men when I was that age? What are the differences?
Well, I think it's become an accepted piece, and we've kind of smoothed the pillow a little bit to allow, through our system of education, to allow out. And I don't think it needs to be. So, you know, there was a time when schools were designed to provide opportunity, and it still does that to a large extent. But I think what we've done is we've just created a greater breadth of opportunity in education, which isn't necessarily something that's aspirational, but just exits at different exit points. And they suit some people and they are there, but they are there by design. And you're supposed to get to the end of the education system, like your son, as you mentioned, and have choices. Do I go left? Do I go right? Do I go straight ahead? That's what education is supposed to provide. When it funnels particular groups into a certain space, that's wrong, actually, and we need to challenge that.
You mentioned before transformative education, and some in the education space currently would say, well, we're very transformative. As a parent of two sons, I'm finding transformation is actually looking backwards towards tradition and not forward towards progressivism. Is that a vision that you share for Tepene?
Yeah, and there's that betwixt position, because this place has a history, and so how do you recognise that and respect that? Because there's aspects of it that are phenomenal, in actual fact. But they should be launching pads to allow us to move forward. So if we understand, again, that notion of whakapapa or ancestry, of being able to live, you know, the vista from the view of shoulders of others that have gone before us allows us to be progressive. So, yeah, history, ancestry have all got their place in terms of providing us with a place to stand, but it should be to move forward. And so, yeah, again, the closing of the school has allowed the school, the trust board, and those associated with it to consider hard. The rhetoric has always been there, this idea of excellence, this idea of being progressive and moving forward. The reality, when you challenge some of those norms of tradition, we become unstuck. And so, yeah, we are fortunate, I think, because we've been given permissions to do things the way in which we see as being relevant. We travelled around the country at the start of the year and listened to the voices of our people. Mm. They're pretty clear, actually, what they want.
Yeah, well, with your depth of experience, what does excellence look like?
Yeah, well, it's a funny thing. But, you know, there are some standardised aspects that you have to achieve, and we're being, you know, formalised now to ensure that we get those things. I think the aspects of literacy, numeracy, of NCA, all of those other quantifiable statistics, they should just be a given, I think. Mm. Yeah, you've got to do some work and you've got to be creative and you've got to put some gaps and fill some gaps, so to speak, but they should be a given. The excellence for me is the added two. In this country and in a school like Tepene, after 5 years, students should expect to leave this place with a level of capability and confidence in their own culture and language. So I see those as being points of excellence. We will inherit young children now coming in who are already fluent speakers, who are already bilingual. And so how do we elevate that into other positions? The areas of excellence for me, I think where there's a strong focus on leadership, and I think all schools talk about it, but what does leadership look like for us in terms of our contribution back to our communities, our contribution back to whānau? The social fabric of this country needs an overhaul in terms of how we empathetically take people forward with us, rather than a feeling we have to climb to the top of the hill only to stand there on your own. So, yeah, I think those aspects of what excellence looks like, there'll be some that'll chase the sporting dream, there'll be some that'll want to become astronauts and everything else in between. I think the part that we are clearer about is that, you know, the idea of having a social conscience, I think, is something that I'm really keen on promoting. And the tickets along the way are just that, but they don't necessarily define you. I think you'll be, you know, I think our ability to take people with us on a journey in this space allows the leadership coming out of a program or kaupapa like Tepene will allow our people to move forward, because there'll only be a small handful of people who get this, what I think is a privileged opportunity. And therefore, what's the reciprocity back to their whānau, back to their community? And if we can do that, that to me is excellence.
Yeah. In terms of positive masculinity, again, raising two sons myself. And one of the things I love about the school that they're in, Catholic boys, is that they have a brotherhood. The brotherhood is exceptionally important. How do you foster positive masculinity, and what sort of special challenges do young Māori and Pacifica men have in being able to feel comfortable within their own skins, within their own masculinity, that other young men don't necessarily have?
Yeah, I think you're right. There's something special about boarding schools. There's something special about boys' schools. But I want to just premise it a little bit by saying often some of the single-sex boys' schools that promote that very aspect of being, you know, favourable in terms of learning, they sometimes pull on a demographic of society that would enable those successes that they have. Because when in actual fact you look across some of the boys' education and boys' schools in this country and scratch the surface and ask how are their Māori boys doing, actually they're not doing very well. So they may well be very successful schools, but not necessarily for that group. So I think, you know, to premise it a little bit, I would put that in there. In terms of how we talk about the buoying up, the masculinity, those aspects as being really favourable for our boys in terms of their learning, it's just that in that first instance, it's okay to be who you are. I think the roles that play in that, and I think Māori, again, have a really good template in terms of the complementary roles that we have in terms of male and female. And I think how we teach that stuff, the fact that Yvette and I are both taking on the co-principalship, for us, it's recognition, the fact that I clearly won't have all of the answers. But the other part is that we normalise that type of relationship, that we bring different strengths, but equally, they are equally important. There are times when it's, you know, her voice will be the important voice to hear, and there'll be other occasions when my voice may be. And how we manage that, I think, is about exampling that complementary roles that we need to play within whānau, within community. So the first part is to say that, you know, it'd be fair to say for those of us in the education system that boys aren't doing well. And again, this is not a sexist thing, but there's been an over-feminization. In the last school I ran, we would often talk about girls being more organized, more mature, positive, positive, positive. And that's wonderful. But when we applied exactly the same lens to boys on that, then we were often finding ourselves thinking, at least, well, they're less organized and they're less mature and they're less engaged and a negative. So to flip the question around was simply to say, okay, what are they good at? What are they good at? And let's go after that. Let's see their potential, let's see their abilities and foster that. Stop trying to fix the problem, so to speak. And I think just a mindset around that stuff is important. So, yeah, if that answers their question.
So the boarding, the full-time boarding, because that was one of the things I read on your website, that you are boarding these boys there full-time. And that's nothing new. I mean, as I said to you before we got started, I'm in Hawke's Bay. So we've got the examples here of Te Aoti College. We've got, for the girls, we've got Hokereri and St. Joseph's Māori Girls College. So there's a strong tradition of Māori education here and successful education too. So that shows that there is a track record of success. Now, all of those schools, particularly Te Aoti, they are fully boarding. What are the advantages of having these young men not only learn together but live together?
Yeah, you mentioned before about a brotherhood. I think that all plays into that. The ability to create an environment where culturally, socially, you can allow kids to be kids first and foremost and excel. I think all of that advantage. We may change our mind after the first 6 months and think, heck, because the realities of boarding schools is that unless they are productively occupied, what's the point in being there? So as we've started to investigate how can we do the education thing differently, better for boys, I think what we all would recognise in teaching is that no one, kids, staff, don't want to be stuck in a classroom for 5 hours in a row. And so the boarding element allows us to break our day up. And so one of the things that we're going to put in place, and we've talked this through with our staff who are coming on board, our ability to expand our day. So from 7 in the morning through to, you know, 8, 9 o'clock at night. Now, we're not all going to be doing those big long shifts, so to speak, but our ability to maximise the time through a boarding arrangement we think is being really ideal. Similarly, on the weekends, that we want to ensure that we've got opportunities and yeah, a range of activities for our kids to do. We're on 400 acres of land here. So talking with the other schools around this region about how we might create a hub here around agricultural opportunity, looking at the agri-science, agri-business, agri-technologies. I just think they're really exciting opportunities. So yeah, the boarding element for us was something that we deliberately chased after because I think it's got the potential to do something special. The challenge with a 9-to-3 school, if there is such a thing, is that you are locked into completing this curriculum and getting coverage and needing so many hours per week per subject to ensure that you get that coverage. It's tough, actually. It's tough. For young Māori people who are wanting a whole range of other things from a cultural perspective as compulsory for them, they don't have a choice around that stuff, then you need a longer day, actually. Yeah, so, yeah, a little bit daunting because 24 hours and 7 days a week. But again, the charter school model allows us a whole raft of flexibilities that would not otherwise be palatable.
Oh, well, I'm glad you brought charter schools up because I was about to go there next. Why is it the flexibility that drew you to the charter school model? And I mean, is it also the ability now that charter schools are back on the table that gave you that push to be able to get Deepini up and running again?
Yeah, both. I think what we saw was an opportunity to get some funding through ministry. So we went down that line and we're in the mix of that. We have an interview next week down in Wellington and, yeah, that'll determine whether we get that. The Trust Board, regardless, have made a decision to commit to this place financially and get it moving. So we're lucky from that perspective. We have a backup. The charter school aspect for us, I don't think it matters what type of school you are is the truth. I think it matters the people you've got in it who are aligned and passionate about delivering outcomes. That said, the charter school option does allow us to employ people who are non-teachers. There's a percentage of people that have to be registered as teachers because there's still an element of curriculum that you need to cover. But as I mentioned, in a place like this, we're going to need a raft of skill sets that allow our kids to have a raft of opportunity and exposure. So, yeah, the flexibility most definitely allows us. But I think if I've learned something over the first couple of goes we've had at starting up our own school, to do it without funding, which is what we did when we started our first school. We went for 6 years without any funding, and it was tough, actually. It was tough. Not so much the financial part, that clearly plays a part in it. You find other ways to make money. But it was more about the unsureness of whether we could keep this thing going, given that we now had young people and families fully invested in what we were doing. And that, you know, that was a bit of a toll, actually. But we got there eventually. This time around, if we're successful enough, the charter school option will provide some funding, but more importantly, allow us the flexibility, as you mentioned.
So do you worry about a flip-flopping of governments? Because they're fickle and fey things, these politicians. Nathan, do you worry that in 2-5 years' time that you may then have to be forced to go back into a conventional model and face difficult decisions? Or are you just going to... Do you have contingencies in place for that, is what I'm asking.
Maybe I should be more worried than I am, but no, I've always kind of just decided that actually, if you look at the whakapapa, the ancestry that we stand on in terms of those pioneers of Kōhangareo and Kura Kaupapa Māori, the wānanga, we were young children growing up around when Te Wānanga o Raukawa was established. And what we saw there in the genius of people like Whatarangi Winiat, it was just belief in yourself. And we are fortunate to stand on the back of lots of that work that's gone ahead of us. And it means an element of sacrifice to an extent, but yeah, I should possibly be a little bit more worried than I am, but I put it this way, if we are doing a good job, why would anybody shut you down?
Yeah.
And I know that that might mean you take on a different tag of becoming a designated something or other school. A message that I would suggest is that we don't want to actually be an anything school. We want government to support us to achieve the outcomes we wish to achieve. Yeah, we want the best for our kids, so why would you not want to support that? And if the mainstream system was delivering it, we would happily move back into that space.
So then you mentioned before, charter schools give you that freedom to actually employ people that are specialists in areas outside of formal education. So what do those specialists look like? Who are these people that you're employing? What do they teach?
Yeah, well, I guess one of the things is trying to remind people that we teach people, we don't teach subjects, or we shouldn't, rather. So that's the first part. People who have a connection from that perspective at a cultural level, people in the area of sport, bringing another raft of skills. I think as well, as we were to look at the Māori male, the Pacific male in education are a rare species.
Mm.
Don't we need to find another way to bring people into the mix? Teacher recruitment at the moment is at an all-time low. Who wants to do it? And then when you break that down further in terms of the different groups of that, yeah, Māori and Pacific males are a rare beast. And so how do you engage those people? So some of the people that we are bringing on board, we will put through a teacher training program, but we'll have to fund it ourselves to enable them to have the ticket, because there is some merit in being qualified to teach people, but it's clearly not the whole answer. Otherwise, we wouldn't have the situation we have.
Yeah,
I think the life skills that they will bring, I look at the raft of young men who have been attracted into areas of trade, for example. Now, they're enticed through all of the government systems that make that really, really favourable to them. They go into the system, they come out the other end with an apprenticeship if they're lucky, and they do that work. But some of those people have now business skills, life skills, along with the technical skills that they may have in terms of their particular trade that would be well worth bringing back into the education system. So I look at the number of young Māori Pacifica men that go into the sports professional zone, and you know, again, they're really well enticed into those spaces, but they come to realise really quickly it's got a really short shelf life. But again, the experiences and opportunities that they have, they're most likely to come back and say, yeah, this is an avenue, but best that you have a backup plan because, you know, it didn't last as long as I thought it was going to last. And I think all of that messaging and just the fact that they would see people who look like themselves having walked down the same paths that they are aiming to do would allow those young people opportunities to, yeah, think a little bit wider.
Mm. Yeah, I mean, as a lifelong teacher, why do you think that there is such a drought of, particularly men, is it that over-feminisation of education? Is it actually putting young men off wanting to enter education as a noble profession?
Yeah, well, that may be a part of it. At the end of the day, I could earn a lot more money elsewhere. You know, how do you then re-incentivize things? Because you're not going to get more money in a job like this. So how do you re-incentivize it? And I got into teaching for the holidays. I didn't choose this career to change the world or anything like that. I got onto it because I thought, gee, 8 weeks at Christmas time sounded wonderful, only to realize that it was gobbled up with a whole lot of preparation and other things. I do think there are some ways that you could simplify things. Yeah, there is challenges in this space in terms of recruitment. And I think that there's some rigidity in there. I think it's too top down in terms of there's a real hierarchical approach in terms of expectation of what teachers should be doing. I think there are so many roles now that teachers have to play that the profession is, the word you mentioned has become, it's no longer a noble profession. I don't think there's provision in the space for time out with pay to further studies. So that those of us who started teaching almost 40 years ago have done, or not necessarily, even though many will have, it's not necessary that you've done any further qualifications. And yet the way the world shifted, even if you just look at technology, for example, look at the journey I had to go through just to get onto this call. when I went to Teachers Training College, I'd never even seen a computer. So I think, you know, there are other ways that they could do it without necessarily giving you more money. That's not the answer for everything. It's not the answer. It would be nice, but it's not the answer. I think there are other ways that they could keep you engaged in the system. Otherwise, you end up in roles that are attached to education that allow you to work from home. All of those other things that become attractive mean that we take really good people away from the chalk face, so to speak.
Yeah. Now, the school actually has, prior to its closure in 2000, a pretty illustrious alumni. than its books. Have many of them popped out of the woodwork, and or even some of the old boys from when you went through? Have you shoulder tapped them and said, come on, kia ora, kia ora, let's go. Give us a hand, yeah. let's put your name in. What sort of support have you had from them?
Yeah, phenomenal support. I mean, there's a massive enthusiasm. A month or so ago, we had a reopening of a couple of the buildings here that are going to be used in the first part of the reopening. And, yeah, 750 people turned up on site along with a, you know, raft of well-wishers. And, again, as you mentioned, if you look across middle management and even senior management in this country, you are hard-pressed not to find somebody from Tipuna involved in those spaces. And their support has been, yeah, it's been humbling, actually. They are keen for their old school to reopen, but they are really keen to support us in terms of how we push forward with a new chapter in this place. And so, yeah, it's something for us to hang our hat on. And we are, yeah, extremely grateful. Their support has been very forthcoming.
Oh, that's good. I'm really pleased to hear that. So how are enrolments going for next year?
Yeah, well, one of the big question marks was, is there an appetite for this? We live on the back doorstep of a huge city, so there's some advantages of being in this part of the world. We had three times the amount of people that we could take. So we're only enrolling in our year 9 and 10 program for the start of next year. We could have filled our quota three times over.
Wow.
That's a tough space to be, but it's a reminder about the importance that education still plays for Māori families, that they are prepared to bring their kids back from Australia, they're prepared to transport them from the length and breadth of this country. We had applications from people from the Pacific wanting to re-engage with this place. And, yeah, I think there's an appetite. You know, Tipuna needs to acknowledge Manukura in the sense that it has carved a bit of a reputation for itself in terms of an alternative model for education. It sat, and it still does, sits in the top 20 schools in the country academically for university entrance pass rates with Māori students. And there are another school, St. Joseph's, down in your part of the world.
Yeah, right? I was going to mention that, yeah.
I look at the work that Arie here, Stirling, and people are doing in places like Ngā Tapuwai, you know, a decile one school, and without wishing to cast any sort of cloud over that, that's phenomenal what they are doing. And so we've got these pockets of amazing success. And I think the challenge now is, how do we network ourselves to ensure that just becomes normalised? I looked at the end of year celebration for Manukura last night, and I sent them a note this morning just to say congratulations. But to recognise that they're in a really atypical, privileged position to be a part of something like that. And sadly, it wasn't something that I talked about lots when I was there, but now that I'm not there, I can kind of boast about it almost. But this place has walked on the back of those footsteps as well, along with what's happened, as I mentioned earlier, in the Kura Kaupapa Kohangareo movement. Those pioneers have really paved the way for us to believe in ourselves that we can deliver education for ourselves.
Yeah. Have you got challenges within Māori din then? Because I know that I've got an educator that I speak to in the tertiary space, and he's trying to rebuild a lot of what he's doing around kotahitanga, because he's seeing a movement away from those traditional values that started in the kohanga movement. Is there a little friction behind the curtain that you have to sort of navigate to be able to make sure that you can walk amongst everybody, but there's always going to be factions that will want to push you in one direction or another? Or have you been able to just go, nope, this is what my wife and I are doing, we know what works, you either coming along on the journey with us or not?
Yeah, well, no, we've probably taken a different approach. I think travelling around the country at the start of the year was really affirming for us in terms of what it was that people wanted. There will always be ends of spectrums that people have different views. There have been some people who have said that, no, this is the way and this is what we need to have in place for our kids. Actually, if I've learned anything, it's just about having diversity, having choice. We won't be the answer for everybody, but hopefully we're a good choice. And I think as long as we just keep ourselves in that headspace, we're not better than the person down the road. We are just endeavouring to provide opportunity and choice. We want to be the best provider for Māori boys' education in the world. And, you know, when I sit with staff here who are saying to me, I want my art department to be the best in the country, to have people who are that aspirational working with a cohort that are the least served in this It's a massive challenge for us. But I love the audacity of it. That's our endeavor. And if we get close to that, we'll have done something good. If we achieve that, we'll have done something phenomenal. But I think nonetheless, there will always be people who wish to take you in a certain direction or hold you in a certain lane. Yeah, tradition has got its place for sure. But I think more important than tradition is relevance. If we look at words like tikanga, and, you know, the derivative of that word effectively is to just do what's tikka, do what's right. So tikanga doesn't, you know, enshrine us and etch us into stone that says we can never move again. Actually, tikanga is malleable, it's flexible, it's seasonal, and it allows us to move in that space as well. And my message to that is really just saying tīpuni moving forward can't lock itself into a time zone. It needs to be progressive, as you said at the start.
Mm. I had someone ask me the other day what tikanga actually meant, and like for me, it's a moral compass. It is, you know, it is a, like a Māori view of a moral compass. It's leading a life that's sort of good with a justice, a natural justice, really. And it's goodness, isn't it? And it's certainly great to instill those in young men, because I think that they struggle with devices and all the rest of it that they have to worry about. It's probably lovely for them to be able to come to you and actually pop the world outside those gates and actually have an environment that is sets it aside. So then once you've got this established, and as you said, you're taking year 9, year 10 cohorts the next few years. So, you know, you're going to get this established, Queen Vic, next steps?
That question's been asked a few times. There's even been assumptions that we were doing that part of it. But I know that the Queen Vic old girls have got some plans in place. They've got to find someone crazy enough like us to have a go at doing this. I'm not fully abreast of what they're doing, but I know that the Trust Board is committed to supporting whatever initiative might come from that. So it would be a wonderful thing to happen in lots of ways. The need and the priority is clearly around boys.
Yeah,
I loved where we were in terms of manukura, and I love lots of the success we had, including the success with boys. But I wanted to do something different, and it's based on where the priority and where the need is. You might question our sanity for going down this track in some regards, but I've always been a firm believer in the real potential. When I would travel with sports teams of boys, I used to love it. I would see their humour, I would see their cheek, I would see all of those other aspects, but I would see them come forward as leaders, whereas in a co-ed situation, often the system didn't allow it. When we go to marae, we see how all of those complementary roles exist. So it's normal and natural for us to exist in those spaces. But I think the reason for doing this in terms of tīpuni was more about allowing them an opportunity to be boys and celebrate that aspect. You mentioned before about technology, and, you know, we intend to equip this place really well in terms of access to all of the latest technologies and even the challenge around how we use AI and all the rest of it. Whilst it's been frowned on in lots of things, and universities are even talking about how do we abolish it almost, well, firstly, you're not. Secondly, you know, when I was at school, we were always stumped because you had to know the answer. Now you have to know the question and the answer, you know. And so the role that AI and all of those other technologies will play will be really important. We had an interesting 2 days. We invited all of the applicants to site here. They stayed overnight. And for that 48-hour period almost, they were parentless and they were deviceless. And one of the key comments that came through the next day was how in 2 days this group of kids had really become connected. And as more people mentioned it to me, it kind of dawned on me, you know, one of the key attributes or one of the key aspects for driving that, they didn't have their phone.
Mm.
So for that 48-hour period, well, almost, about 30 hours of that at least, they didn't have a phone. They were playing games. They were talking. They were running around. They were being boys. Mm. And I thought, gee, this is refreshing. That doesn't mean we're going to be deviceless, but there's a place for just allowing them to be that.
Yes. So the very important question now, Nathan, bull rush, yes or no?
Oh, even if you said no, you just know it's going to happen around the corner. happen in the hallways that are going to damage our buildings, but it will.
Yeah, I can see you're going to have to prepare for those balls through windows now. But hey, look, if anybody has any questions, or even if there's someone out there right now, they're listening to this and they're thinking, wow, this is an education model I want to get behind. I may have a legacy or a scholarship or some support that we want to lend a hand to. How do they get hold of you, and how do they actually find out a little bit more about what you're doing?
Well, we have a website. If you just Google TPNet, it will come up. Google St. Stephen's School, it will come up as well. The promotion of the word Tipene is, you know, it's the Māori name for Stephen. But again, it's reflective of this transition and the promotion of Te Reo Māori in that space. So it connects to the past, but it deliberately moves forward. The reality is that Tipene has actually had 9 names in its history. It's been going since 1844, and it's been a raft of names. So yeah, in terms of getting in touch with us, we have a website, and all of our contact details are on there. We are still taking enrolments, and we've had a number of people who weren't successful getting in this year, which is challenging, looking to reapply for the following year. We have met with the Trust Board and reprioritised the build, because we now realise there is demand, and we anticipate that if we can do a good job of this, it'll go through the roof. And that's exciting, but we need to, yeah.
And how many numbers, like actual physical numbers, are you looking at for next year, and what's your total goal number once you're fully founded? Like, you've got all school levels there.
Yeah, so we said 30, and then in typical Māori fashion, that number went to 40.
Basically, indicative. Māori indicative.
That's, it's our challenge at the moment is we don't have all of the facilities available. So we've got enough space to sleep them. It was the dining space, because we've got a temporary space that we're utilising in the first year. So, yeah, once the facilities are built and that work's happening at the moment, then that'll allow us. We are looking to grow to a role of 250, 300, which is a big boarding school. Mm. And there may be other challenges or maybe further opportunities. Once we get to that point, we can judge that at the time. But I think the important part initially, and the reason for starting small, and the reason for starting with just, well, it was going to be year 9s, and then we expanded that to year 10s as well, was the smaller we can keep it, the better chance. This place has to shine. It will have a spotlight on it. It closed for political reasons. It'll be a political reason that it's opening again. As I mentioned at the start, the necessity for Māori boys, Pacifica boys' education, I don't think there's been a greater need in this country.
Mm. And for any parents out there who haven't been able to get in, or they've got boys at home right now, as a lifelong educator, to any of those frazzled mums and dads for this raising these young men, what's a piece of advice that you can give them that they can help get these young men set on the right direction for their futures?
Yeah, well, the first part is to say sorry. It was a tough ask, and I know that the staff members, you know, they recognise for some of these kids, a very small handful of them would have had choices. Their parents would have been able to afford other opportunities. For many of our families who were coming, if Tipene wasn't the option that they were accepted to, they were probably going to the school down the road. And I don't mean this in a derogatory way, but the facts say that they're likely to fail. And so that's a tough position for us to be in one sense. The advice I give people is that when you're looking at schools, look at a range of schools, look at the options. But the question you have to ask isn't whether their rugby team's doing well, or what the university entrance pass rates are like, or do they have a music program. Those will all be things that you need to ask for sure. But you want to ask, show me the evidence that says you're successful in those spaces for Māori boys. And if they're doing that, then I would suggest that's the school you should jump at. Because we kind of have a catchphrase here, something like, we don't want to just win for an hour on Saturday. We want to win from Monday to Friday as well. And schools are supposed to be about that first and foremost.
And I'm glad to say that you're actually looking at winning and not just giving prizes for participation. I think that's also incredibly important too. You want them to strive, don't you? Hey, look, Nathan, this has been an absolute joy. This has been Nathan Jury from Tipene College, about to reopen. This is very exciting next year. And that website, I think it's at tipene.co.nz, I think it was, wasn't it? Nice and simple, nice and simple. Well, kia ora, thank you very much for your time today. Don't disappear, more coming up here on Reality Check Radio here with Marie. Take care.
Kia ora. Kia ora, Marie.
The RCR shop has great gift ideas, from great looking tees, hoodies, caps, tote bags, bumper stickers and more. The RCR shop is now open at www.realitycheck.radio/shop.